Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there's a better way to work.
Good afternoon and welcome to Engage for Success Radio show number 368, developing strategies to engage and inspire. So today we're going to be talking about how to develop those strategies to engage and inspire people in your teams and communities, including in times of adversity. I'm Jo Dodds, your host for today. I'm an engagement consultant working within the Engage for Success core team. The Engage for Success movement is an inclusive movement committed to the idea that there is a better way to work by releasing more of the capability and potential of people at work. We spread the word about employee engagement and shine a light on good practice, inspiring people and workplaces to thrive. And we're widely supported across the UK, involving the public, private and third sectors. If you go to our website, engagesuccess.org, and use the link at the bottom of the page, you can join our newsletter list, and all our social media links are there too. So my guest today is Georgina Clark of Ascent Wellbeing. Hi, Georgina. Thanks for joining me. Is that how you say it? Should I check that?
Yeah, that's how you say it. Well done, Jo. Yeah, it's Ascent Wellbeing, like going up a mountain or something like that.
Lovely. Excellent. Yeah, we met about, well, literally the week before lockdown. We were at a health and wellbeing event in Birmingham, weren't we? And we had a good old chat. And you're now on the show. Or maybe that was last year. I'm just thinking, our show booked so far ahead, it might have even been last year.
No, Jo, it wasn't. It was about the 10th and 11th of March. So it was before everything went into lockdown. So it's one of our last outings out, I think.
It was, yeah. It was in the time of, we didn't know whether we were supposed to shake hands or distance or not, or cough into our elbow. We're probably supposed to do that anyway, aren't we? And it was all a bit odd. And odd that we were still in a sort of a large people situation, so close to it all happening. In fact, we spoke to them a couple of weeks ago, and it's looking like it all being virtual, not surprisingly, next year. So interesting. So tell us a bit about your background and why you wanted to come on and talk to us about employee engagement in general, and also in engaging and inspiring our people.
Yeah, well, my background is probably about 20 years I've worked in public health and health inequalities type field. A large part of that was in the public sector in kind of communities. But I've also worked in the private sector as well. And really, I suppose a lot of my roles in the past, they've been quite eclectic. I've kind of run services, developed strategies, a lot of sort of project and program management. But the sort of common theme, I suppose, within it all has been sort of people and bringing out the best in people, people's well-being, people's strengths and engagement, really, which I suppose is why I connected with you guys and the program that you're running, which, you know, I was really drawn to, because I think engagement is the heart of a lot of things, really, in terms of how we engage with each other, how we engage with ourselves. So my background's been mainly sort of health and wellbeing projects. More recently, I set up Ascent Wellbeing to look at more sort of workplace wellbeing. But as I say, a large part of what I've done is in communities. But probably about 10 years ago now, I came across positive psychology. The way that I came across that was, you know, I worked a lot in the public sector for councils and large charities and things. And I think we were doing some sort of sexual health and mental health programs in communities. And one of my tasks that I'd been given was to look at all the data in a particular community. You know, to look at kind of what we needed to do, and it was all the problems that were going on in the community. So I was looking at obesity rates and the rates of alcohol consumption and the deprivation, and I remember I had a bit of a light bulb moment where I just thought, you know what, if I lived in this community, I wouldn't feel very empowered, you know, to have all this sort of deficit data around what we're doing, when, you know, I might feel quite proud of my community and there's a lot of assets and strengths in my community. So I started looking at that, and I found this field called positive psychology, which was fairly new actually. And I found that lots of psychologists had been thinking the same as me, in that they thought, you know, traditional psychology has been very focused on deficit really and illness. And positive psychologists felt that there was a gap there about, you know, potential and the study of happiness and the study of human strengths. So I started to get very interested in that area. And so probably for the last sort of 5-10 years, I've been looking at how we can use positive psychology and well-being principles to kind of create projects which improve people's health and well-being.
So one of the reasons that I was really keen to talk to you following our conversation when we first met was a bit like Scott Gould, who has got the accolade of being the person who's been on the radio show most often. have a sort of engagement background that isn't employee engagement per se. You've already said it's obviously a lot of it about community. And you and I had a bit of a conversation about those sort of similarities and taking some of the principles that you've been using into the workplace from a community sort of angle. Tell us a bit more about that, what you see in terms of importance of community engagement and where you see that sort of connects to the workplace.
I think when I spoke to you, it was about that, how I've noticed how similar that is, that sort of staff and workplace engagement and community engagement is very similar, really, because if you think about it, it's about engaging people and inspiring people, you know, both in the community and at work. And I suppose, you know, I was thinking about this before I came on the show, two of the key strands, I would say, that I think overlap there. I talked about strengths. So looking at people's strengths and how you can harness people's strengths, you know, it's the same in the community as it is in the workplace. So we at Ascent Wellbeing, we look at strengths quite a lot in terms of the field of positive psychology. And why strengths are different from skills are that strengths are more sort of naturally what are innate within us, you know, our natural strengths, as opposed to things that we learn and we become good at, and we may become very competent at things, but they could drain us. So I'll give you an example of a workplace that I worked in where we looked at a team's strengths, and we found there was a guy who worked in the team who was brilliant at presentations, and he was always wheeled out whenever there was like a motivational speech or a presentation to be done. And when we did everybody's strengths, interestingly, his strengths around presenting and that kind of thing came up as a learned behaviour, which means that you can become very competent at it, but it drains you. And when we spoke to him, he said, yeah, I really don't enjoy them, but I keep being wheeled out to do them. And I suppose in the workplace, the idea is with strengths that we all have to do things sometimes that drain us. Or, you know, I know, like when I come round to do my financial admin for work, you know, it really drains me. But you kind of have to do it because there isn't anyone else to do it, you know. So, you know, we can't do everything we love and that energizes us all the time. But the idea with strengths is that we do more of what energizes us than what doesn't. And we try and find environments and jobs that sort of match our natural strengths. And that's the same as the engagement that I did in communities as well. I mean, one of the sort of most successful programs I did in the community was around this thing called asset-based community development, was where you build on the strengths of communities. And my role in the community there, I went in as a community development worker, was really to notice the strengths of residents. And, you know, often when people don't feel included or they don't feel confident, they feel maybe they've not got much to offer the world. And, you know, I talked about mental health never as being as important as it is now with the way people are feeling. And we need to notice each other's strengths and what we do well and feed back on that. And that's really what I did in the community. You know, that was my main role, really, was to notice people's strengths and to kind of connect people and harness those strengths. And we really transformed a statistically deprived, very deprived community by doing that, really. But the other strand I wanted to talk about was coaching as well. And that's where I think there's an overlap with the workplace and communities is, when I was in the community, again, my role was as a coach. And that is something that I think we don't do in communities enough. What I've noticed from my 20 years experience working in communities was that the sort of authorities that end up in communities like the council or large charities or the housing associations, it's sometimes you can get into those roles of seeing people the community as being sort of passive recipients to what you're actually offering, rather than active agents of change. And the same in the workplace as well. You know, we've got like hierarchical systems sometimes where the sort of managers and leaders think that they're there to make all the decisions, and you know, that actually we're going to come up with something and then we're going to tell you what that is. Whereas actually you often get more ownership and accountability if you get people involved in designing the solutions. So coaching, I think, is something that we can draw on more for thinking about, you know, we haven't always got to have all the answers ourselves. We can bring people along with us and look at our staff strengths and think, right, you know, Jodie's particularly creative, you know, we need some ideas, let's get in a room and talk through what things could look like in the future. So I think for me, coaching and strengths were two key strands that overlapped the community work I've done and the workplace wellbeing work that I'm doing as well.
Yes, yeah. And I guess, you know, an opportunity to sort of learn in both areas, to sort of develop both areas. As you say, you know, coaching perhaps is something that's not spoken about or potentially used as much in communities, and there's a lot of that happens in organisations. I suppose strengths, it's probably a bit more generic across the two, but maybe also not talked about in those terms, I suppose. But interesting, yeah. Again, I said, talking to, you know, Scott talks about sort of engagement as a thing, regardless of where you are. It's the sort of thing we're saying here, isn't it? That if you're engaging people, whether it's in the community or in the workplace or somewhere else, that there is that sort of opportunity to learn from all those different environments, I guess, and take some of that learning into the other environment. So let's talk a bit more about, you know, when you are engaging people, when you are inspiring people in those communities and workplaces, what sort of results happen?
Yeah, well, I think, I've always been very interested in systems, you know, and we set Ascent Wellbeing up really to be very much about workplace wellbeing systems, because what we saw was that, you know, a lot of wellbeing initiatives that were brought in could end up being a little bit sort of tokenistic or short term, and you know, the research shows that if you create systems, long-term sustainable systems, you know around well-being and performance, then the results are going to be greater and your return on investment will be greater than if you just do sort of reactive or shorter term programs. So I suppose I've always been involved with creating systems and projects and strategies throughout all my roles, really, that create long-term change. So I suppose in the communities, I suppose it's about sustainability and, you know, I worked on a lot of projects actually that didn't have sustainability, really, you know, and as soon as the funding stops, you know, the project stops. I think probably the most successful program I did within communities was around asset-based community development, and I'm still very passionate about that now, and I think it's got a lot of the answers for things that are coming up, like the COVID and the pandemic and the inequalities that we're seeing. And asset-based community development, as I say, builds on strengths of communities, and so it helps to connect the strengths within that community. So one community I worked in, for instance, it's all around trust and relationships, which again, very similar to workplace, really, about building trust with people and building long-term relationships. And it took a long time, you know, and this is the thing with short-term targets and short projects, they don't always give you the time to build those trust and relationships that you need. And luckily, the program that we delivered in the community around asset-based community development allowed us to do that. So, you know, we didn't have to get 20 people back to work within a week, you know, because the problem with that is that, you know, if the community knows that your agenda is to get them back to work and you've only got a few weeks to do it, it becomes more about your goals and your agenda than the community. So we were lucky in that we had the time to build the trust and relationships. But what ended up happening was the community, we had time to look at what mattered for the community, what was the most important thing that they wanted to work at. And that could be a few things. You know, you might have one little group over here doing gardening and another doing something else over here. But in the end, they ended up building this sort of residence group that which turned into a charity, which ended up doing affordable food. So they picked up the food from supermarkets and distributed it into the community. And that they've now got a shop and they help people who are struggling in the community. So for COVID, you know, it's been brilliant because they provided food into the community, support. And this, you know, this was in an area that is statistically deprived. So, you know, there was a lot of barriers to people getting involved and, you know, sort of there was a lot of need in the community, really, which residents are tackling. So it's been sustainable and long term. And the same for the workplace. So we're working on a big program at the moment where, you know, we've spent time looking at, you know, what is already going on in the workplace, what can we build on, how can we build wellbeing into existing systems rather than having it as an add-on. And we're finding that that's working a lot better. We've got much better engagement with leadership teams, for instance. So, you know, if in a leadership team they've suddenly got this whole new program to do and everyone's, you know, stressed out anyway from everything they've got to manage, you know, it becomes something that's quite stressful, you know. And I said at the beginning of this program, you know, we don't want a wellbeing program to make everyone stressed, you know, that would be sort of counterproductive. So we've looked at all the systems and we started building better engagement into the existing systems. So for instance, in one project I'm working at, they were already building safety champions, you know, because safety is a big part of their work. So we've looked at like adding health in, you know, health and safety is a term we know, but often we sort of associate with safety more than health. So we're kind of building up the health part of it. You know, how can we have good well-being as well as, you know, safety? How can we not just prevent accidents, but how can we prevent psychological risk happening or you know, sort of damage to our psychological well-being? How can we stop that happening? How can we build environments where people flourish? And what we found is the leaders have been really engaged, and now we're sort of, that's flowing down into the work, you know, into the workers really. And the idea is that everyone will be involved really in designing the future and what it looks like, whether that just be that they give their ideas or whether that be that they get into a room and help to plan it, but trying to get sort of all levels of the organisation involved, not just it being the leaders passing it down into the workforce as this is our solution for you, you know. It's about co-production, I suppose.
Yeah. And when we first met, we spent a bit of time talking about the whole sort of bottom-up situation. And I said, you know, as a movement, we've at times over the years talked about how we can do some stuff around sort of encouraging employees to think about engagement so that they push up and ask for it rather than it always focusing on the leaders and the managers. So we had quite an interesting conversation around that. How do you think some of the stuff that you've talked about can help with that sort of bottom-up approach in work as well as in the community? And maybe in engagement.
I mean, I suppose most of my career really has been about bottom-up approaches and that very grassroots type way of working, whether that being communities or kind of workplaces. I mean, I remember what somebody once said to me, oh, you know, you're quite a top-down, bottom-up person. I kind of wasn't sure whether that was a compliment or not really, but I think it was, because I think it's something about, you know, obviously you need the leadership to be on board with what you're doing. So I suppose in that way it's kind of top down, because if the leaders aren't on board with it, you know, especially I suppose in a workplace, it is difficult to actually make it happen. But once the leaders are on board, it's about the leaders, you know, understanding and being on board with that bottom-up approach. So understanding what it is for a start. But we tend to have quite hierarchical systems, I think, both in the workplace and in communities. So in communities, what tends to happen is you have partnership working, which is a good thing. So you will have, you know, the housing association, the council, the lead charities in an area, you know, partners, health partners coming together to come up with a plan for the community. But what can tend to happen with that, and I think it's probably also if people have leadership strengths, which is a good thing, but what I found in communities, I had to try and shelve my leadership strengths in a way, because my job was to find the community leaders. So it was actually noticing leadership skills in others rather than me taking over. So sometimes, you know, in the community, we'd sit in a meeting that someone had said they were going to lead, but they were scared of leading it, you know. And I wanted to jump in and lead it, but I stopped myself, because it's that thing of letting other people find their feet and learn new skills and build their confidence, you know, rather than. And I've noticed this with people who go into communities, that they find that hard because they just want the project to happen, which is fair enough. And often we have these short term targets and we have to take over with our own leadership skills. But I suppose a key word for me would be co-production. And that's a word we use in the workplace wellbeing programs that we run, as well as in the community. So co-production, co-design as well, co-design, co-production, is about really, you know, what we used to see a lot in communities is consultation practice, which I sort of became a bit averse to in the end, was, you know, we'd get the community, invite the community along, have lovely flip charts around the wall. And, you know, this happens in workplaces as well. And we all decide what we want. But there's a lot of things that are difficult there, because one, you've only got a couple of hours. Sometimes people don't really know what they want or what the solutions could be. You haven't got that time to build up trust. And then you sort of, the leaders take the flip charts away and then they decide how it's going to be. Whereas I suppose co-production is much more about, you know, the workplace being involved, or the community being involved in that design going forward. So at Ascent, for instance, we have four stages of the program that we go through. So we go through Discover, where we look at what wellbeing's like at the moment, what have you currently got in place, dreaming, and that's a big part where you can use coaching to dream about what exceptional wellbeing would look like, and then design, you all design together the new future, and then deliver, you actually deliver it, and then somewhere along the line there you build in measurement and evaluation as well. So I think it's really about, I mean, the strengths thing comes into it as well, because it's about knowing your people, building up that trust with your people, and then understanding what they have got to offer and contribute, and where they become energized and what inspires them, and starting to notice more, I suppose, with your workforce about how they operate together. And inclusion is a big part of that. I mean, it's a huge part in communities, you know, about people not feeling included. And I think we tend to feel like if we've got particular strengths, like if, for instance, speaking up in a meeting is easy for us, then we forget that for some people it's not easy, you know. So it's actually giving people a safe space, I think, to actually say how they feel, and recognizing that there will be barriers to that, and how one person communicates won't be how someone else communicates. What respect looks like to one person won't be how it looks like to another. So I think coaching groups to actually come up with their own sort of set of guidelines about how they're going to run together, or run a project together, but recognizing that certain people will probably take over because maybe it's their natural leadership skills or something like that. But actually you have to realize what those barriers are to people not participating, and telling them that it's okay, and recognizing that they have got strength. So even if they are scared to speak up in a meeting, they will have other things that they can contribute in different ways. And it's about trying to value everybody.
So we're coming to the last sort of 6 minutes or so of the show. It just flies past. And I'm really intrigued to sort of connect what we've been saying to the sort of unprecedented events that we're in. And one of the things that's sort of frustrating me with the sort of narrative in the business sort of corporate world at the moment is a bit of, you know, getting back to normal, or sort of going back to the office, going, you know, back to how we've done things sort of thing. Because for me, I think it's about moving forwards, and you know what we did might not be the right way moving forwards, but you know, who knows? We don't know yet. How can we apply some of this thinking to what our organizations are doing, you know, moving forwards, given we're in such a difficult time, and you know, and there's so much uncertainty, as we know. We're recording it in the week where, you know, lockdown's been announced again, so you know, we think we're moving forwards and then, you know, it goes backwards again sort of thing. What can we do in organisations? What can leaders do to use some of this stuff to, you know, hopefully carve a path out in the future with their organisation and their team?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think this word resilience is a key word for me when I'm thinking about, you know, COVID and the pandemic and lockdowns and how people are feeling. And I think, you know, if you have built up that sort of engagement, those trusting environments, those places where you're noticing people's strengths, where people aren't afraid to speak up, where people feel valued and respected, if you've got that kind of culture, then I think you're going to be a lot more resilient when things come along like this, because you will have that sort of team where you can discuss things, you can pull on people's strengths for different ideas, you design new things together. So I think really it's about building resilience within your teams, within the communities. Like I mentioned, the community, you know, having that sustainable way of working so that now whatever happens and whatever comes along, you know, there's a group of people who are pulling on different strengths in the community to kind of, you know, sort of tackle the things that are coming along. And it's the same with the workplace, really. So I think really leaders, you know, if there hasn't been that focus on that kind of culture, you know, now is a great time to do that and to look at kind of well-being within the team and actually looking at some of the barriers about, you know, around inclusion, about people feeling respected and valued. So it'd be a great time really for leaders to get teams together and just start listening about, you know, how people are feeling now, what is going on now, how could we make things better in the future? You know, at the start of the meeting, what we're doing at the moment in one of our programs is we're looking at meeting culture as well. And like, you know, how many times do we go to a meeting where it's fun, where it's, you know, especially on Zoom at the moment, you're all on Zoom, you know, it's how can we create meeting cultures or group cultures where we can all talk, where we can feel listened to? And I think part of that is spending some time at the beginning of it. So you could set up some sessions, for instance, to look at well-being or to look at COVID and pandemic lockdowns, whatever's going on, and sort of spend half an hour at the beginning saying, right, what do we want this meeting to be like? You know, how can we get the best out of each other? You know, how can we make sure we listen, and how can we hold each other accountable so we keep revisiting that? So many times I've seen, you know, I'm sure you have, you know, the code of conduct that you come up with and you have respect on there, you know, but then that's just a piece of paper that sits on the side. It doesn't really mean anything. So how can we make it, bring it to life and keep coming back to it? And, you know, even at the end of each meeting, can we rag rate it or something, you know, and find out how people are feeling? And I think also with leaders sharing their own vulnerability, you know, I think growth mindset as well is another area that I think people could look into. Carol Dweck's done some great research around growth mindset, and that it's about creating a growth mindset culture. So you're looking at the process as well as the outcome. We're so target oriented. We're very, very focused on the targets, aren't we? But actually, what are we learning as we go along? And what about when things go wrong? Let's celebrate that, you know, let's celebrate our mistakes. And it's about leaders role modeling that as well, and role modeling their own well-being and their own ways of doing things, and saying it's okay to make mistakes as long as we engage with that process and look at you know, the learning that we've got from that. And you'll find in the end you'll probably exceed your targets more by doing that than just being very target focused, where you're not really looking at the process as you go along.
Thank you. It's been quick as ever, loads in there and some really good tips there for organisations moving forward in these challenging and uncertain times. So thank you for joining me today.
Oh, thanks, Jo. It's been great. I've really enjoyed it. Thanks for listening.
And just to let you know, next week, Jo Moffat will be back and she'll be talking to Harry Morton of Lower Street. And they're going to be talking about how to create an engaging private podcast for your team.
Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there's a better way to work.